ॐ जनचमनन्दस्य जनाञ्जनश्लाकया चक्षुरसुमिलञ्जन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनुभीष्टां स्तपितां जैन भूतले सायं प्रकृतं मह्यं ददति सपनन्तिकम्. वंशिकोपदुर्भ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुवैव च प्रतिष्ठितं पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. Beginning the eighth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is quite a canto. Actually, it's amazing. Pastimes described in this canto. Huge pastimes, churning the ocean of milk with a mountain and a great snake resting upon a tortoise. Mohini Murti. Bali Maharaj, incredible pastime of Bali Maharaj, where Lord Vamandev grows and with his foot touches the universe and pierces the layers of the universe, taking everything away from Lord Maharaj. Incredible pastime. And then finally, the Matsya, or the fish incarnation of the Lord in this canto. So if Krishna allows, we will go through it. The estimation that I have is it should take a little less than 3 months, maybe, to go through it, or 12 weeks, a little less. But every journey begins with a first step. So we'll start with the first verse of the eighth canto. We've just heard the completion of the description of the descendants of Swayambhuva Manu, ending with it's a long description, actually, lasting the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh, even the seventh canto. So after hearing all that, ending with the pastime of Lord Nrisingadev, and then Yudhisthira Maharaj questioning Narada Muni about the process of attaining higher realization, like Prahlad Maharaj, that had been described. And Narada Muni had described the glories of Yudhisthira Maharaj right at the end, showing that Yudhisthira Maharaj was such an exalted person, so exalted that the Lord Himself would stay very close to him. What could make Krishna stay close to someone? It is the exaltedness of that devotee, and the exaltedness is measured in his bhakti, in his love for Krishna, and that attracts Krishna. Atma prajanta vadanyata, attracting him as bhakta vatsalya, to give himself to his devotees. So indeed, Krishna gave himself to all the Pandavas, Yudhisthira Maharaj, Bhim, Arjuna, Nakul, Sahadeva, Kunti Devi, all the Pandavas, because of their great devotion. Maya Shakmana Partha Yoga Yunjan. What's the last word in that? Yoga Yunjan? Marashraya. Because of their great attachment to Krishna, Krishna reciprocates. So Prikin Raj, after hearing all that, and actually remember that the longer this narration goes on, the closer Prikin Raj is to death, because his allotted time is only 7 days, and he's chosen to hear this Bhagavatam in his last days. So as the cantos go on, the moment gets closer to the departure of, from this world, of Prikin Raj. So King Prikin Raj, King Prikin said, O my Lord, this is text one, my spiritual master, now I have fully heard from your grace about the dynasty of Swayambhuva Manu. But there are also other Manus, and I want to hear about their dynasties. Kindly describe them to us. O learned Brahmana Sukadeva Goswami, the great learned persons who are completely intelligent describe the activities and appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead during the various Manvantaras. We are very eager to hear about these narrations. Kindly describe them. The Bhagavatam has 10 different topics as described in the second canto. it slips my mind. Something uttaya. Manvantara ishanukita naroda mukti asraya. So the asraya, or the shelter of all the different topics, is Krishna, even the shelter of mukti. But the first two topics, we've heard very clearly, the saga, visaga, the primary and secondary creations of the Lord. And naroda means the winding up of the creation. Mukti, liberation, ashraya, about Krishna, specifically will be described in the 10th canto. And now manvantara, the different manvantaras, the different incarnations of the Lord. There are 6 different types of incarnations of the Lord. There's guna avatars, purusha avatars, lila avatars, shaktavesha avatars, yuga avatars, and manvantaras. And because the manu avatars, they're all empowered by Krishna to perform their function. And indeed, in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, we even heard of the appearance of Swayambhuva Manu, when Brahma was frustrated that the creation wasn't proceeding quickly enough. Out of that desire, he created a wonderful form, human form, of Swayambhuva Manu and his wife Satarupa. And they humbly, submissively took over the earth for the purpose of increasing the population, thus assisting Lord Brahma. So the Manvantaras are especially their incarnations, but in each of their different periods in which they reign, and there are 14 Manvantaras in a day of Brahma. So each one of them, during those periods, the Lord will incarnate in different ways, because there are many yugas that pass. So the Lord incarnates, and these are very, very wonderful. So Sukadeva Goswami is appreciating the importance, and he's expressing his eagerness to hear of these different incarnations. Ishanu Kata, the Isha, the controller, the Kata, the pastimes, the activities about him. Text 3. O learned Brahmana, kindly describe to us whatever activities the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who created this cosmic manifestation, has performed in the past Manvantaras, is performing at the present, and will perform in the future Manvantaras. We've heard about Swayambhuva Manu, and now he wants to hear about past Manus, present Manus, future Manus, and the different incarnations, and the pastimes of the Lord during those periods where Manu reigns. Sukadeva Goswami began his reply, this is text 4, Manavo asmin vyatita sat kalpe swayambhuvadaya adyaste katito yatra devadinam cha sambhava. In the present kalpa, there have already been 6 manus. I've described to you Swayambhuva Manu and the appearance of many demigods. In this kalpa of Brahma, Swayambhuva is the first manu. Swayambhuva Manu had 2 daughters, named Akuti and Devahuti. From their wombs, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared as 2 sons, namely Jagyamurti and Kapila, respectively. These sons were entrusted with preaching about religion and knowledge. So religion is preached by Jagyapati or Jagyamurti, and Kapila Muni preached the Sankhya philosophy of knowledge mixed with devotion and yoga, devotional yoga. And we've heard about Kapila Muni's teachings at the end of the third canto. There were many, many chapters devoted to that, from approximately chapter 25, I believe, onward to the end of the third canto. 6. O best of the Kurus, I have already described in the third canto the activities of Kapila, the son of Devahuti. Now I shall describe the activities of Jagapati, the son of Akuti. Text 7. Swayambhuva Manu, the husband of Satarupa, was by nature not at all attached to enjoyment of the senses. Thus he gave up his kingdom of sense enjoyment and entered the forest with his wife to practice austerities. Even that simple fact that the king gave up everything at the end of one's life, because one works so hard in one's life. Maybe one doesn't work very hard, but whatever, however hard one works, one accumulates things in his life, and one doesn't have the energy one had when one was younger. And with energy in his youth, he accumulated. And he doesn't have that energy anymore when he's older. So at the end of one's life, one tends to be very, very attached to the fruit of his hard work. And yet, this personality was the king. So how much opulence and wealth did he possess? And power. And power, people get more attached to even than wealth, because power brings one wealth. If one has shakti of power, wealth comes easily. If one has no power, even the wealth that one has, one will lose. But Swayambhuva Manu was so detached that he gave up this kingdom of sense enjoyment and entered the forest with his wife to practice austerities. And his wife was so detached too, because she was the queen. And the queen has so many comforts, so many maidservants, and then living in the forest, eating what? Roots, herbs, leaves, water from the river? For a queen or a princess, very, very, very difficult. But they were not ordinary. These were exalted personages. Prabhupada's purport. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, evam parampara praptam imam rajasyo vidu, the supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. All the Manus were perfect kings. They were Rajarshis, Raja Rishis. They were kings and yet learned saintly persons as well, Rishis. In other words, although they held posts as kings of the world, they were as good as great saints. Swayambhuva Manu, for example, was the emperor of the world, yet he had no desire for sense gratification. This is the meaning of monarchy. The king of the country or the emperor of the empire must be so trained that by nature he renounces sense gratification. It is not that because one becomes king, he should unnecessarily spend money for sense gratification. I heard a lecture of Srila Prabhupada's. It was actually a morning walk of Prabhupada's just this morning. And the topic came up about monarchy and kings, and how nowadays the government of the people, by the people, they have one thing on their mind, and that is to collect the taxes, somehow extract from the citizens the money that they've accumulated through their hard work, to get that money and spend it lavishly. But Prabhupada is saying, he's condemning that way of action. It is not that one becomes king, he should unnecessarily spend money for sense gratification. As soon as kings became degraded, in other words, not really thinking of the welfare of their citizens, but exploiting the citizens, taxing them, and spending the money on sense enjoyment, as soon as the kings deviate from their own duty in that way, they were lost. Similarly, at the present moment, monarchy having been lost, the people have created democracy, which is also failing. Is democracy failing? Even though there's such a push all over the world to spread democracy. But has democracy succeeded? Do the people have faith in and trust the leaders that they themselves have elected? No. There's such cynicism about the government leaders. Such cynicism. It's failing. But what is not failing, what is increasing, is the taxes, for sure. Now, by the laws of nature, the time is coming when dictatorship will put the citizens into more and more difficulty. If the king or dictator individually, or the members of the government collectively, cannot maintain the state or kingdom according to the rules of Manu Samhita, certainly their government will not endure, because the citizens become so dissatisfied. In some countries, the democracies, the people are so dissatisfied and they don't even want to vote between, they think this one's a cheater and this one's a cheater, why vote even? So such a small percentage of the population actually votes. It's not that people are enthusiastic about the results that democracy has offered. O scion of Bharata, after Swayambhuva Manu had thus entered the forest with his wife, he stood on one leg on the bank of the river Sunanda, and in this way, with only one leg touching the earth, he performed great austerities for 100 years. While performing these austerities, he spoke as follows. So in texts 9 through 16, those seven verses, he's going to describe and pray to the super soul, which it appears that is his worshipable Lord and the summit of his realization. Very different, actually, from either understanding the Lord as Brahman or understanding the Lord as Bhagavan. You can see that there is a, when we hear these verses, when one understands the super soul, one understands it's somewhere in between impersonal and personal. Yes, he has form, but it's an all-pervading type of form without beginning and end, and that aspect is what's stressed, the super soul. With Swayambhuva Manu, he utters these prayers. And Prabhupada explains in the purport, I think he quotes Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that he spoke these, he just murmured these to himself, these prayers that we're now going to hear. And it describes the position of the Supreme Being. When one understands the Supreme as Brahman, Vedanti tat tatva vigyas tatvam yajnanam adayam. Brahmeti understands the supreme, absolute truth as Brahman. There are no qualities to talk about. And as one focuses one's realization, one can understand the super soul, and the super soul has all the all-pervading, unlimited attributes of Brahman, but more. And then when one ultimately understands the Supreme as Bhagawan, the possessor of all opulences, he has all the potencies and characteristics of Brahman, the all-pervadingness, the oneness of Brahman, the beginninglessness and the of the Supersoul, etc., the all-pervadingness of the Supersoul, but yet personality. Personality and characteristics. The the Brahman has no qualities. It's called nirgun, qualityless. Practically, you cannot say anything about Brahman, because as soon as you say anything about Brahman, you are applying a concept to it, and it is conceptless, attributeless. But the super soul is different. It has qualities, but it doesn't have personality. But Bhagavan has qualities and personality. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here is his first prayer, text 9. The Supreme Living Being, yena chaitya te vishvam, the Supreme Living Being has created this material world of animation. And it's interesting to remember that in the previous section that we read, or 2 days ago we read at the end of the seventh canto, we read how the universe has variety because the source of the universe has variety. And this material world is a reflection of that spiritual world. So he has created this material world of animation, movement, activity. And the spiritual world has activity, and that activity in the spiritual world is eternal. Everything is conscious and blissful. But, so he has created the material world of animation. It is not that he was created by this material world. There is no anthropomorphic idea. And he is not matter. He creates the material world. The creator cannot be created by that which has been created by him. He is the source. That means he existed before the material creation. So he created the material world. It is not that he was created by this material world. That means he himself is non-material. When everything is silent, the Supreme Being stays awake as a witness. So that quality of witness is one of the qualities of the super soul. He witnesses everything. Savasya chamrde sanavisto matyas smitam gyanam aponam cha. He is the anumanta, the permitter, and the witness. So he is always awake. When we sleep, when we are annihilated, he is still always awake and fully conscious of everything. And this super soul is an aspect, a portion of the Supreme Lord Krishna. A complete, a plenary portion. Prabhupada uses that term quite frequently. Plenary. Plenary means complete. Sometimes in government they use that word as well. A plenary meeting. That means everyone attends. All the participants, the members attend. So the Lord is plenary portion. So that kind of, the reason why Prabhupada uses that term is because a portion in the material, used in the material sense, like an angsa, that's the Sanskrit word for a part or a portion. So a portion implies that it's incomplete. It's only a part of something. But a complete portion, a plenary portion, although it's a part, a portion, yet, because it's the Lord, it's complete. And the example given in the Brahma Samhita, Niparjariva, that when one candle is lit from another, the original candle has a power, and the secondary candle has a power, and the secondary candle comes from the original candle, but yet they're both equally potent. So similarly, the angsas, or the parts of the Supreme Lord, the colors and angsas, the parts of the Supreme Lord, they're all Vishnu Tattva. They all have the potency of the Lord. So he is awake as the witness in all circumstances. The living entity does not know him, but he knows everything. He knows everything. Everything. That means there's nothing that he does not know. He knows everything at all times, past, present, and future. This is wonderful. And someone dares claims to be God, that we are all God, but what do we know? We can't say that we know nothing, but we can say that we know very, very little. Here is the second, possibly the last, final third of Prabhupada's purport. When the material world is awake and put in working order, this is a kind of dream, a waking dream. One time, Prabhupada was asked about the significance of dreams, and his reply was, night dream, day dream, they are all the same. They are all dreams. Because we have a real life that we are asleep to now. So even though there may be significance of a night dream expressing the something that is going on in the subconscious mind, but it is all within the realm of dream. Night dream, daydream, all within the realm of things going on in the subtle material body, the subtle covering over the soul. When the living entities go to sleep, they dream again. So awake is a dream and sleeping is a dream. And when unconscious at the time of annihilation, when this material world is unmanifested, they enter another stage of dreaming. At any stage in the material world, therefore, they are all dreaming. In the spiritual world, however, everything is awake. Awake to its actual consciousness, its full consciousness, its actual identity. And it is completely different than the dreams, the varieties of dreams of the material world. Text 10. Within this universe, the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His super soul feature is present everywhere. And this is basically who Swayambhuvamana was describing, or that aspect of the Supreme Lord, His super soul feature. Whenever there are animate or inanimate beings, He is there. Therefore, one should accept only that which is allotted to him. One should not desire to infringe upon the property of others. So here is the position of the supersoul, and the position of the living entity in relationship to the supersoul is hinted at. The supersoul is everywhere, everything, and he is the possessor. Bharta Bhukta Maheshvara Paramatmakti Chapyukto Dehismin Purushapara. Within everybody, the Hains men within the body, Purushapara, there is a supreme person. And he is the Bharta, the master, the Bhokta, the enjoyer, the Paramatma, the soul, the life of everything. And because everything is his, he is the master, even though in illusion we think that we are the masters. He is actually the master, therefore everything is his. And this understanding is the cause of societal, collective happiness and the individual's personal happiness. If we stop thinking things are ours and start thinking that everything is his, then we are in our natural position. So therefore the first part of this verse speaks about the supersoul everywhere. He's everywhere, and that also implies that everything belongs to him. And the second part of the verse, therefore knowing that everything belongs to the supersoul, one should accept only that which is allotted to him. One should not desire to infringe upon the property of others. So this is straight Ishopanishad. Isavasya idam sarvam. Everything comes from the Lord. And no matter how much comes from him, he is still complete. And one should only take his portion, his own allotment, and not be greedy. One should take, one has a right to take his own, what is allotted to him, and accept that as prasadam, as the mercy of the Lord. But one should not see the material world as a realm for our own enjoyment, with that spirit that the material world, God gave us the material world so we can enjoy it. Like in the Bible, it says that God gave human beings dominion. That means proprietorship. But secondary proprietorship, not primary. The primary proprietorship is always the Supreme Lord's, because we don't create it. The whole world is works on the illusion that the world is ours for our enjoyment. And everyone is thinking like that. Therefore, there's always so much struggle, fighting for gold, the gold standard. But did we create the gold? Did we create the earth? Did we create anything? Did we even create our own bodies? Our own intelligence? The plants, the flowers, the seas, the airs? No. We certainly didn't create all this. And yet we claim proprietorship. No. We should not desire to infringe upon the property of others. We should be satisfied with what we have gotten by the grace of God. Prabhupada's purport. Having described the situation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as transcendental, Swayambhuva Manu, for the instruction of his sons and grandsons in his dynasty, is now describing all the property of the universe as belonging to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Manu's instructions are not only for his own sons and grandsons, but for all of human society. The word man, or in Sanskrit, manushya, has been derived from the name Manu. For all the members of human society are descendants of the original Manu. Manu is also mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, wherein the Lord says, Imam vivasvate yogam proktava mahamavyayam vivasvan manave praha manor ikshakave brahit. I instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god Vivashan, and Vivashan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind. And Manu in turn instructed it to Ikshaku. Swayambhuva Manu and Vivaswata Manu have similar duties. Vivaswata Manu was born of the sun god Vivaswan, and his son was Ikshaku, the king of the earth. Since Manu is understood to be the original father of humanity, human society should follow his instructions. Swayambhuva Manu instructs that whatever exists, not only in the spiritual world, but even within this material world, is the property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present everywhere as the super consciousness, above consciousness. He knows everything. Well, we have consciousness just of what's in our own body. He's a super knower, the super seer. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 13.3, Chetragyam Chapimam Vidhi Sava Chetreshu Bharata. In every field, in other words, in every body, the Supreme Lord is existing as the super soul. The individual soul is given a body in which to live and act according to the instructions of the Supreme Person. And therefore the Supreme Person also exists within every body. We should not think that we are independent. Rather, we should understand that we are allotted a certain portion of the total property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even our bodies is given to us by the Super Soul. And ultimately, it is maintained by Him. And then, when it's time for it to be over, finished. We can take all the medicine that we want. When it's time to go and for the body to disintegrate, no one can do anything. This purport's a long one. Prabhupada continues. This is a few paragraphs later. Everything belongs to the Supreme, and therefore one should not usurp another's property. We have a tendency to manufacture many things. Especially nowadays, we are building skyscrapers or skyscrapers, as Prabhupada would pronounce them, and develop other material facilities. We should know, however, that the ingredients of the skyscrapers and machines cannot be manufactured by anyone but the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The whole world is nothing but a combination of the five material elements. Tejo vari imridam yata vinimaya. A skyscraper is a transformation of earth, water, and fire. Earth and water are combined and burnt into bricks by fire, and a skyscraper is essentially a tall construction of bricks. Nowadays, not so much bricks, but steel and glass and this and that. Although the bricks can be manufactured by man, the ingredients of the bricks are not. So the same principle is there in the steel. Of course, man as a manufacturer may accept a salary from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is stated here. Tena tektena bunjita. One may construct a big skyscraper, but neither the constructor, the merchant, nor the worker can claim proprietorship. No one can say, I own this, because we are not the creator of it. We just manipulate the materials that have already been created by God. Proprietorship belongs to the person who has spent for the building. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has manufactured water, earth, air, fire, and the sky. And one can use these and take a salary, tena tektena bunjita. However, one cannot claim proprietorship. This is perfect communism. Our tendency to construct great buildings should be used only to construct large and valuable temples, and should be used only for the constructing large and valuable temples in which to install the deity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then our desire for construction will be fulfilled. Since all property belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything should be offered to the Lord, and we should take only prasad. Tena taktena bunjita. One can take one's own quota. We should not fight amongst ourselves to take more than we need. As Narada said to Maharaj Yudhisthira, yavad briyet jataram tavat svatvam hideinam adhikam yo bimanyeta sasteno dandam arhati. One may claim proprietorship to as much wealth as required to maintain body and soul together. But one who desires proprietorship over more than that must be considered a thief, and he deserves to be punished by the laws of nature. Of course, we need to be maintained in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Ahara nidrabhaya maituna. But since the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, has provided these necessities of life for the birds and bees, why not for mankind? There is no need for economic development. Everything is provided. Therefore, one should understand that everything belongs to Krishna. And with this idea, one may take prasad. However, if one interferes with the allotments of others, he is a thief. We should not accept more than what we actually need. Therefore, if by chance we get an abundance of money, we should always consider that it belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Krishna consciousness, we are getting sufficient money, but we should never think that the money belongs to us. It belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and should be equally distributed to the workers, the devotees. No devotee should claim that any money or property belongs to him. If one thinks that any portion of property of this huge universe belongs to anyone, he is to be considered a thief and is punishable by the laws of nature. Daivyesha gunamayi mama maya dharatya. No one can surpass the vigilance of material nature or hide his intentions from material nature. If human society unlawfully claims that the property of the universe, either partially or wholly, belongs to mankind, all of human society will be cursed as a society of thieves and will be punished by the laws of nature. Wow. Very strong, straight purport by Srila Prabhupada. So this is, again, this is the what Manu, who's the ruler, the king, he was the king and renounced it. And again, one can say he's not really the king, he's just acting as king on behalf of Krishna. So how could he renounce his kingship? But it was Krishna's desire. So here this purport explains, or the verse rather explains, the Lord is in a supersoul feature, is everywhere, therefore one should accept only that which is allotted to him, one should not desire to infringe upon the property of others. 11. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead constantly watches the activities of the world, no one sees him. In other words, he's always watching. That reminds me of a story when I was once held a writing class in Vrindavan, and Korma Prabhu wrote a story called Big Brother is Watching You. Big Brother is Watching You. And the story that he told, and it was really cleverly done, he told how he was going from Melbourne and flying to Mayapur. And there was a stopover for a day in Thailand, in Bangkok. Bangkok, I think. So they provided a hotel room for him. So he was in the hotel room and he was very tired, and he said his consciousness wasn't really good. And there, as in every hotel room, there's a you-know-what. There is a television. What did you say there was? A one-eyed guru, yes, a television. So Korma said, oh no, I don't want to watch this. But oh, he didn't want to do it. But yet, the guru was too powerful for him. Huh?
The stupid box.
Yes. Was so powerful that he lost the battle with his mind and he turned the switch on. And soon as he turned it on, he heard and as the television came on, there was a picture of Krishna Balaram in Vrindavan at the Krishna Balaram Mandir, and this, it went right onto a picture of Balaram. There was a documentary, and it went right onto a picture of Balaram, and therefore he called it the title. When he wrote about this, he wrote the article entitled "That Big Brother Is Watching You." You may not know that he's watching you. That's Dowji, Big Brother, the elder brother of Krishna, because the super soul comes from him, actually, and he's always watching. He constantly watches the activities of this world, but no one sees him. However, one should not think that because no one sees him, he does not see, for his power to see is never diminished. Therefore, everyone should worship the super soul, who always stays within the individual soul as a friend. So he owns everything from the last verse. And he knows everything. He's omniscient from this verse. But don't worry. He knows everything, but he's suridam sarvabhutanam. He's not going to use what he knows against you. He's going to use it for you, because he's the nearest and dearest friend staying with us always. So we can't really get away with anything. Offering prayers to Krishna, Kunti Devi, the mother of the Pandavas, said, Alakshanam Savabhutanam Antarbahira Vastitam. Krishna, you reside both inside and outside of everything. Yet the unintelligent conditioned souls cannot see you. In Bhagavad Gita it is said that one can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead through Jnana Chakshusha. He who opens these eyes of knowledge is called a spiritual master. Thus we offer our prayers to the spiritual master with the following sloka. Om Gyanate Minandasya Jana Jana Salakaya Chakshusamilitandena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto my spiritual master, who with the torchlight of knowledge has opened my eyes, which were blinded by the darkness of ignorance. That's from the Gautamiya Tantra. The Guru's task is to open the disciple's eyes of knowledge. When the disciple is awakened from ignorance to knowledge, he can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead everywhere, because the Lord actually is everywhere. Anandarasta paramanu chayantarastam. The Lord resides within this universe. He resides within the hearts of all living entities, and He resides even within the atom. Because we lack perfect knowledge, we cannot see God. But a little deliberation can help us to see God everywhere. This requires training. If we take into account whose property is the vast ocean, whose property is the vast land, how the sky exists, how the numberless millions of stars and planets are set in the sky, who has made this universe and whose property it is, we should certainly come to the conclusion that there is a proprietor of everything. When we claim proprietorship over a certain piece of land, whether individually or for our families or nations, we should also consider how we became the proprietors. The land was there before our birth, before we came to the land. How did it become our property? Such deliberation will help us understand that there is a supreme proprietor of everything, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And final paragraph, skipping a paragraph of the purport, the final one. The word Chakshush Yastin Narishyati means that although we cannot see him, this does not mean that he cannot see us. Nor does he die when the cosmic manifestation is annihilated. The example is given in this connection that the sunshine is present when the sun is present. But when the sun is not present, when we cannot see the sun, this does not mean that the sun is lost. The sun is there, but we cannot see it. Similarly, although we cannot see the Supreme Personality of Godhead in our present darkness, our lack of knowledge, He is always present, seeing our activities. As the Paramatma, He is the witness and advisor. Upadrashta Anumanta. Upadrashta means the overseer. Anumanta, the permitter. Upadrashta Anumanta cha. He's both these. Bharta Bhokta Maheshvara, the enjoyer, the master, master and enjoyer, Paramatmati Chapyukto, Dehizmin Purushapara, within the body, the Supreme Purusha is there. Therefore, by following the instructions of the Supreme Master and studying authorized literatures, one can understand that God is present before us, seeing everything, although we have no eyes with which to see Him. 12. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, so He's murmuring this, He's speaking this, not lecturing this, Manu is, but who is hearing it? Who knows? He knows that the Lord is hearing what He says, because He's aware of everything. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has no beginning, because if He has a beginning, that means He's not, there is a point in time where He started. And that means there's a point in time prior to that when He didn't exist. But He has no beginning, He has no end, and no middle. Because how can something that's eternal have a middle? What's the middle of something that's unlimitedly expanded in the past and the future? He belongs to a particular person or nation. Nor does He belong to a particular person or nation. He has no inside or outside. He has no boundaries. The dualities found within this material world, such as beginning and end, mind and theirs, are all absent from the personality of the Supreme Lord. The universe, which emanates from Him, is another feature of the Lord. Therefore, the Supreme Lord is the ultimate truth, and He is complete in greatness. We'll read from Prabhupada's purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is described in the Brahma Samhita Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachidananda Vigraha Anadiyadya Govinda Savakarna Karanam. Krishna, known as Govinda, is the Supreme Controller. He has an eternal, blissful spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, but He is the prime cause of all causes. For the Lord's existence, there is no cause, for He is the cause of everything. He is in everything, maya tatamidam sarvam. He is expanded in everything, but He is not everything. Everything is not Him. He is expanded everywhere, but yet He is separate. Pashyame yogam aisharam, behold my mystic opulence, Krishna explains. I am everywhere and all-pervading, but nothing is in me. I am separate. I'm everywhere but separate. That he is a chintya beta beta, simultaneously one and different. That is explained in this verse. And the final verse that we'll read today. The entire cosmic manifestation is the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, who has millions of names and unlimited potencies. He is self-effulgent. One time Prabhupada was with the devotees at 22nd Avenue, and he said, Prabhupada said that all names are ultimately names of God. So he said, so one of the devotees said, what is even the English names? So he said, what is your name, Prabhupada said. And actually he said, and it must have been Satsarupa Maharaj, so he said, my name is Stephen. And he said, what does Stephen mean? How is that a name of God? He said, Stephen, what does Stephen mean? He said, little. He said, God is the smallest. He is everywhere. He is smaller than the smallest. Aniyam, aniyam, anayor. And He's greater than the greatest. So He has millions, unlimited names, which are all none different from the Supreme Person. This is spiritual existence. By chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, He has millions of names and unlimited potencies. He is self-effulgent, unborn and changeless. So see how the understanding of the super soul is different from the understanding of the all-pervading Brahman. Because there are qualities attached to the super soul. Unlimited potencies is a quality. He is self-effulgent, unborn and changeless. He is the beginning of everything, but He has no beginning. Because He has created this cosmic manifestation by His external energy. He has energies. He has potency. He is not just potent, He has potency. Shakti and Shaktiman. He has created this cosmic manifestation by His external energy. The universe appears to be created, maintained, and annihilated by Him. Nevertheless, He remains inactive in His spiritual energy. So in His spiritual energy, He's not doing, or He's not working hard, creating, maintaining, 24 hours a day, never gets any day off, except in the Bible, He gets Sunday off. But who's maintaining the world while He's taking His day off? Is it just going to like deteriorate? Or it just works by itself? It doesn't need Him to maintain it? So if it doesn't need Him to maintain it, why is He working the 6 days? To create it. That's for the creation. And then what happens after it's created? He has to maintain it. And of course, it's not that He actually is tired and needs a day off. It's we who get tired and need a day off. So, He remains inactive in His spiritual energy, is untouched by the activities of the material energy. He Himself has nothing to do with the material world, with the material realm. He does everything in the material world by his energy. And when he descends into the material world, as we use the word incarnation or avatar, he's actually never in the world, nor is he incarnate. He is never within flesh. He never takes a material body. The word incarnation is not actually a proper word to describe what happens when Krishna comes. He descends, but he never really descends either. We use that word too, but that's not what happens either. He never comes into the material world, touched by the material world. He always remains in the spiritual world. Always, always in the spiritual energy. Never in the material energy. So he's inactive, materially inactive, in his spiritual energy and is untouched by the activities of the material energy. Prabhupada's purport. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says in his Shikasta, Nam Namakari Bhuta Nivasava Shaktis. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has many names, which are all none different from the Supreme Person. This is spiritual existence. By chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, consisting of the names of the Supreme Lord, we find that the name has all the potency of the person. The Lord's activities are many, and according to his activities, he has many names. He appeared as the son of Mother Yasoda, and also as the son of Mother Devaki. And therefore he is named Devaki Nandan and Yasoda Nandan. Parasya Shaktya Vividaya Vishuyate. The Lord has a multitude of energies, and therefore he acts in multifarious ways. Yet he has a particular name. The Shastras recommend which names we should chant, such as Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. It is not that we have to search for some name or manufacture one. Rather, we must follow the saintly persons and the Shastras in chanting his holy name. Although the material and spiritual energies both belong to the Lord, he is impossible to understand as long as we are in the material energy. And when we come to the spiritual energy, he is very easy to know. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Mayam Vyudasya Chit Shakti Kaivalya Stita Atmani. Although the external energy belongs to the Lord, when one is in the external energy, Maya Mama Maya Duratiya, he is very difficult to understand. However, when one comes to the spiritual energy, one can understand him. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita 18:55, it is said, Bhaktyamam abhijananti yavanyas chasmi tatvata. One who wants to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead in reality must take to the platform of bhakti or Krishna consciousness. This bhakti consists of various activities, shravanam kirtanam, vishnu smaranam, parasevanam, archanam, vandanam, dasyam, sakyam, atmanavedanam. And to understand the Lord, one must take to this path of devotional service. Even though the people of the world have forgotten God and may say that God is dead, this is not a fact. One can understand God when one takes to the Krishna consciousness movement, and thus one can be happy. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Okay. Krishna willing, on Wednesday of next week, we shall continue. There's only two more of his prayers left.